But this tension between the plans of God to redeem and remake us and Satan's prosecutorial verdict upon us reaches its climax in the struggle between Satan and Jesus Christ, the child of Revelation chapter 12. The most neglected Christmas passage in the Bible.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast that you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Now, this is a trope, and it no longer hurts me, but it is true. When I was like in fifth grade, and we would go out on the playground to play softball, or even worse, basketball, and we would appoint captains, and they would pick up teams. I knew that I would be the last chose, always the last chose. Whichever team ran out of other options would be stuck with me. If it was softball or baseball, I knew in advance what position I would be playing. I would be playing right field. If we happened to have 10 players, I would be a secondary deep roving right field. Deep, like in another zip code right field, where I couldn't do the team any harm. You'd be surprised in fifth grade how few left-handed batters who pull that there are. So most of the time I stood out in deep right field picking dandelions, and everybody was just as happy about that. Last chose. Neglect. In our family, we read the Christmas story every Christmas day before we get around to opening presents or anything else. And sometimes it's a little hard to choose. Now, you know, if you've paid attention to the Gospels, that the Gospel, according to Mark is the Grinch. He just does not include the Christmas story at all. But Matthew and Luke and John all do. And it can be hard to choose among them. I mean, they're all so poignant, and meaningful, and beautiful. Matthew tells the story of the journey of the Magi and the gifts that they presented to Christ. Luke tells the story of the shepherds, the angelic announcement and the way that they rushed off to find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. Matthew relates the genealogy of Jesus, being a Jew and having that bias. He relates it from the side of Joseph and comes down to the child. Luke relates the genealogy of Jesus, being a doctor, although I'm sure he'd never heard the words DNA, but nevertheless he chooses the Mary side of the equation and brings it down to Jesus. Matthew tells the sad but sacred story of the slaughter of the innocents. Luke relates the stories of Simeon and Anna and their long years of waiting in the temple, finally brought to a glorious end at the arrival of Jesus Christ. John skips all that and goes a little mystic, but it appeals to me. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among men, arriving as light in a dark, dark world. Even Paul, if you go over to the second chapter of Philippians, has a Christmas-appropriate passage where he talks about how Jesus, though he had equality with God, did not regard that as something to be grasped, but humbled himself, taking on flesh, the form of a servant. The incarnation all great and beautiful, and we have read each one before our Christmas tree over the years. Revelation chapter 12 is so obviously a Christmas passage. It is obviously a Christmas passage. The centerpiece of the story is the birth of the child that comes from the woman. And the reaction of the forces of evil to the birth of the child. And the concern to show how the birth of the child fits into the long historical narrative. And if you've been studying the book of Revelation with me on Wednesday mornings, we are right at this point in the narrative of the book of Revelation, ready to maybe do a couple of more things in chapter 12 and move on to chapter 13. Chapter 12 is the chapter that makes everything clear for me. And it is interesting to me that right there in the very middle of the book of Revelation, the heart of the narrative is the birth of Jesus Christ as the fulfillment of the grand covenant promises made by God, and how it is resisted by the forces of evil. And you know, if you follow my teaching on the book of Revelation, that I believe almost everything in the book represents a long historical process that has been going on for all of human history and is still going on today and will continue to go on until the final cycle. The horsemen have been riding all these centuries. They are riding now. The question is, when will the last ride occur? God has appointed two witnesses at several crucial junctures in many generations. And chapter 12 is perhaps the clearest example of all. It tells the story of a woman who is the nation of Israel, and of a great fiery red dragon who is, the chapter tells us before it's done, Satan, the devil. And of the arrival of a child who is the fulfillment of the long plan of God and the defiance of the long plan of Satan. And it's hard to pick up one of those threads and tell the story completely, but I will do my best. I will start with Satan, that great and fiery red dragon. The book of Revelation says that he is our adversary, our accuser. He is our prosecuting attorney. And I would say that he is our slanderer, except for this. Most of the things that he says about us are unfortunately true. He points at us and he says, weak, reprobate, sinner, unfaithful. And it is all just so true. We have a long history of this relationship with Satan. It starts with Adam and Eve. And Satan seems determined, the very first time we run into him, to prove that Adam and Eve will not be faithful to God, that offered the right bauble, they will throw over their allegiance to their Creator and seek something else. And he was right. And they fell. And they became cursed. And the world they inhabited grew dark. And I'm sure that on that occasion, Satan looked to the throne, because he still had access to the throne in the ear of God. And he said, see? I told you. God apparently says, yes, They are fallen and cursed. Now I must enter into my plan to redeem them, to purchase them back, to set them free, to remake them. I take it from the way that Scripture proceeds that Satan was not on board with this plan. Most of you will recall the book of Job, and the book of Job sets forth a paradigm that shows what is happening underneath the day-to-day reality that we see at all times, where Satan looks at a man whom God said is righteous, and Satan says, "Let me show you. Make him suffer just a little, and he will curse you to your face," because Satan still had access to the throne and the ear of God. And he was given permission to try Job, and Job came pretty close, but he squeaked through without cursing God. Oh, that we all should succeed in such measure that we do not always. If you read the third chapter of the prophecy of Zechariah, and note as you read it, you're closing in on the very end of the Old Testament, Zechariah, way toward the end, and it is obvious that Satan still has access to heaven, to the throne and the ear of God, and the Israelites have come back from the Babylonian captivity. Now, I need to say one thing before I go on. How did they get to the Babylonian captivity? They got there by worshiping false gods, the Baals, the Ashtaroths. They got there by burning their young in honor of the false god Moloch. They got there by planting the sacred groves where immoral sexual ceremonies were carried out. They got there by cutting the throats of babes on the altar of Baal to get better corn crops. And once you begin to worship these false gods, it corrupts everything. They got there because in that corruption they abused the poor and the widow and the orphan, selling the needy for the price of a pair of shoes, never setting the captive free. Paul makes it clear that behind those false gods stands Satan and those angels who fell with him. So they got to the captivity because they were tempted and tested and proven to be unfaithful to God and unresponsive to his calls for repentance and his insistence upon righteousness. They got there because Satan, as we will be told later in the Gospels, desires to sift you like wheat and pronounce you unfit. The chaff, the bug shells, the dirt, the rodent feces. This is the reason you sift wheat, to get the filth out. And Satan is our adversary. Sifts and says, filth, rubbish, spoiled, ruined, and is sadly right. And so the Israelites went to the captivity having been sifted by the accuser, the adversary. And they have come back, and the burden of the ministry of the prophet Zechariah is to encourage them to rebuild the temple so that they may resume their lost worship of the high and holy God. And Satan, who still has access to the throne and ear of God, says to God, You have got to be kidding me. I mean, you're joking, right? You think they're going to do better this time? You think they won't do exactly? Look at the high priest you've got. It's a man named Joshua. He's a sinner. He's a ruined sinner. He's dirty and filthy and soiled. And he will be the high priest who is going to lead this stubborn and stiff-necked and unfaithful people into being better? 70 years ago, they were worshiping rocks instead of you. And you think this generation is going to turn it around? You think this high priest is going to make a difference? God says, yes, Joshua is dirty. So let's clean him up. And he does. And then he says, this Joshua, this high priest and his companions, the men who stand with him are symbols of men for a time yet to come when I will send my servant the branch, and the branch will take away the sins of the land in a single day. God said. It is this tension between God's plans for humanity and Satan's accusing prosecutorial verdict upon us. And I don't know to what extent the angels understood the depth and the details of God's plan. I'm pretty sure of this, though. Satan can read, huh? How many of you think that Satan probably knows the scriptures better than you know them? And he can twist them. And he can pervert them. But his clever twistings are based upon an intimate knowledge. I believe that Satan can read. And when he saw the Son of God take on flesh in Bethlehem, he knew that something truly enormous was about to happen. And so the great red fiery dragon stood before the woman Israel, who was about to give birth to the long promised Messiah child, to devour that child. Herod, his useful idiot, his dupe, tried to carry out his will on the spot and failed. The child was saved. The promise that God had made to Abraham that through his descendants all the peoples of the earth would be blessed is moved forward another day. Another year. But Satan is not through. He spent the next 3 years alternating between two activities. One was trying to kill Jesus, and the other was trying to tempt Jesus. After all, he's a man now. He's a man like other men. He's a man with flesh. And he can be hurt. And he can get tired. And you watch, God. You watch. Let him be a little hungry. And he will sell you out to fill his belly. How about it, Jesus? Turn these rocks into bread. Only it didn't work this time. Well, okay. He got by that one. But I promise you this, God, give him the chance to gain the adoring approval of his peers who will be dust in just a few years. And he will cast your plan aside and go for it. Jump from the temple. The angels, they'll catch you. Oh, what a spectacle. and that one. Excuse me. That one worked for Satan about as well as the first one. Okay. Wealth and fame and power. Everyone goes for that one. Forsake God. Bow down and worship me. And I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. And on the failure of that third temptation, it says that Satan left Jesus for a while. Implied in leaving for a while is that he came back. And I think he came back several times. I know that on the one instance, when Peter said, "Crucified? We're not going to let you be crucified. We're just not going to allow it." That Jesus said to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Because the tempter was present. And when he wasn't tempting Jesus, trying to point out that he would be a failure as all other men had been failures, he was still busy trying to kill Jesus. To have him dragged out of this village or that and thrown over some cliff, or to rouse the anger of the Pharisees and Sadducees so that the fateful day would come. And Jesus kept saying, "It's not time yet. It's not time yet. It's not time yet." But this tension between the plans of God to redeem and remake us and Satan's prosecutorial verdict upon us reaches its climax in the struggle between Satan and Jesus Christ, the child of Revelation chapter 12. The most neglected Christmas passage in the Bible. In telling the story of Satan, I have also told the story of the woman, so I can retell it in much less time. It is not for nothing that the Revelation says that the woman was in pain to bring the child into the world. All the failures, all the fallings, all the frustrations, all the punishments, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians. Israel was in pain to bring this child into the world. But finally, Mary became the tip of the spear, and the child arrived. Satan, who has had access to the throne and the ear of God to this point, is cast down. Apparently, a certain level of disagreement is allowed, but the plot to murder someone's son crosses a line. And it's good news for heaven, but it's bad news for us. For our adversary is now stuck here with us and knows that his time is short. For this reason, Christmas is such an essential holiday. Such an important part of our understanding of God and his plan. We know from the Gospel of John that Jesus came into a world that was dark to minister to a people who were far from God and needed to be brought home. Christmas 2019, Jesus comes to a world that is dark. and people who are far from God and wild, violent, thrashing, fiery red dragon who knows that his time is short. And Jesus will step on that beast's head and bring us home. This is Christmas. And for a few precious moments here toward the end of the month of December, the world is just a little more primed to hear the story. So among the lights and the cards and the parties and the gifts, find a moment to tell someone who is far from God about the woman and the dragon and the male child and God's long and patient plan that reaches right into our lives today. It will be the best gift you can give them. And it is also possible that it is a gift you need to receive. It is an unfortunate truth that we still fall to the wiles of the dragon. And sometimes it's in a concentrated moment of temptation toward one instant sin. And sometimes it's by the slow accretion of this world's filth upon our hearts and souls. But one way or the other, we wake up and find that we have become far from God. And though we are responsible for our own actions, the claw marks of the dragon underlie our tragedy. Christ will bring you home.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton, all one word, .com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.